Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, it's day 5 of the Paris Climate Conference, and say you're lucky enough to be walking around the streets of the host city. You might see some 600 eye-catching ads that look like bus stop posters from some of the world's biggest corporations. Except, look a little closer. Why would Volkswagen use the tagline, "We're sorry that we got caught"? Or why would the words, "we knew about the impact of fossil fuels but publicly denied it," appear beneath the ExxonMobil logo? Well, these ads are spoofs, of course. They're done by Brandalism, a British advocacy group. And the posters are calling out the world's biggest corporations for their contributions to global warming. However, many of these same companies are official sponsors of the Paris climate talks, and hundreds more have sent delegations to the meeting. So that could signal a turning point in how the private sector views its role in curbing climate change. That's the optimists' view. The pessimists, like the Guardian newspaper, point out in a survey of 10 Paris corporate sponsors that most don't publish data on their CO2 emissions, half don't track their lifetime carbon footprint, and only one is reducing its emissions in line with EU targets. So it's complicated. But Mindy Luber is one of the optimists. She is executive director of Ceres, the longtime Boston-based advocacy group that works with investors and businesses on sustainability. Luber is in Paris, and she says she's never been to a climate conference quite like this one.
There's lots of reason for optimism. One specific change that's quite notable, palpable, and I think making a difference is the fact that it is not only environmental groups and policymakers from around the world. There is an extraordinary bench of business leaders and financial leaders who are here saying the economy cannot survive without addressing climate change. The financial implications, as well as the environmental implications, the public health implications, the national security implications, but the financial future of our economy has to pivot to a clean energy economy. It is not working to be founded on fossil fuels. And we've got companies here from every sector, Coca-Cola and Unilever and VF Corp and Kraft Foods, another 6 or 8 food companies today announced that they want to see action on climate from a policy perspective and a price on carbon. A few weeks ago, food and beverage companies, 10 CEOs, signed a statement saying they're sending a group to Paris and they want to see action on climate. And a week before that, we stood with 6 of the largest financial institutions, Bank of America, Citigroup, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Wells Fargo, saying we need to move quickly, expeditiously, and act on climate. We need a deal coming out of Paris, and we need the right market signals.
What is it specifically from their perspective? I mean, what is it about their businesses or the impact climate is having on their businesses that makes them want to the world to pivot to renewables and away from fossil fuels?
Well, the leadership of capital markets, companies are seeing the handwriting on the wall. When there's not enough water, which is impacted by climate, there aren't a lot of businesses that are able to run their manufacturing facilities. When we have dozens of weather-related storms that knock out parts of a state, like Hurricane Sandy did in New York, like many storms and tsunamis in Southeast Asia, when those things happen, every business is knocked out of commission for a week, for 2 weeks, for 3 weeks. When you look at the drought, what has it meant to the cotton crop? And to agricultural companies, and to apparel companies, and to wine companies. I could walk through every sector of our economy, and in every sector of the economy, people are being harmed.
So what are the levers that big, wealthy, influential global companies like the ones that you named, what are the levers that they can pull to help us get to a clean energy future faster?
Well, if you're a large company, first of all, your ability just to change things that are done in your company. Take a look at Apple saying 100% of their data centers are going to be run by renewable energy. IKEA, 100% renewable by 2020. I could go down the list. The fact that companies can reduce their own carbon footprint and can make those same expectations of everybody in their supply chain, and that those companies can invest enormous amounts of money in renewable energy, in transportation vehicles that are less dependent upon fossil fuels, just within their own world, they can make huge changes. But then let's take that a step further. Those very same companies have extraordinary influence on the policy debate, whether it's in the United States Congress or whether it's on an international scale.
So I'm really curious what you think about this, Mindy, because you actually hinted at it a little bit earlier. Say in an ideal world, we did have all this activism and influence from major corporations towards a clean energy future. How effective is that going to be for as long as in the United States there does seem to be very deeply entrenched political interest that stop the government from enacting policies or regulations that could, you know, potentially create markets or encourage markets around a clean energy future? I mean, right now, we are at the beginning of a presidential election cycle where some of the leading candidates who want to occupy the White House are still questioning the validity of global warming.
Right. Now, and that's unfortunate. I'll say a few things about that. One is here in Paris, people are wanting to just move right past it. If the United States Congress can't be with them, they're finding ways from the administration, the State Department, to work with 170 other countries who are stepping up and saying, we as countries need to reduce our carbon footprint and we need to act on climate. This was the first year that we're seeing more money invested in clean energy than we are in fossil fuels. That's the future. That's what it's going to look like. That's where our economy is going to grow. That's where jobs are going to come from. Corporations are starting to realize there is no future for their own companies unless we address climate change.
Well, let me just jump in here because I'm curious about something. In that case, do American businesses run the risk of being hampered or their businesses being damaged if the U.S. government, the U.S. Congress, doesn't catch up to where it seems the rest of the world is heading?
Yes, and that's why they're out in force here in Paris, and that's why they're starting to make a case in Washington. I mean, we've got the most important piece of, well, it's regulation, it's not legislation, the Clean Power Plan in the United States. Regulations put out by the EPA. Folks initially said the business community will be unanimously against that. They don't like the EPA. They don't like regulations. We brought 350 businesses into that debate saying we need to act on the Clean Power Plan because it's about building a stronger economy. It's about creating jobs. It's about building our future. And that argument has been very compelling because it happens to be the truth in state legislatures, and it will start becoming more compelling in the United States Congress.
So I'm curious, Mindy, I mean, you have very good relationships with a lot of very influential business leaders. What do they think about, you know, an idea that has long been championed by many in the world of climate and climate activism, that we as consumers and businesses and economies ought to be paying the true price for carbon? I mean, how would that affect business?
You know, the businesses here understand it. We had a group of 410 investors from around the world, predominantly the United States, say we are calling for a price on carbon. Right now, carbon pollution in many parts of the world and many parts of the United States is priced at zero. When something's free, you get more of it. The cost of carbon pollution to society is billions and billions of dollars. And so you need to price it for it to the behavior to follow.
So many people listening right now might be, you know, very inspired and hopeful by hearing that so much of the private sector and the business world is there in Paris. But on the other hand, I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today. You can't blame people for thinking that corporations sometimes speak out of both sides of their mouths, because we also have the Volkswagen emissions scandal. We also have the New York Attorney General launching an investigation into Exxon for possibly misleading investors about what it knew about global warming in the 1970s. I mean, these aren't all, you know, sort of corporate champions riding to the climate's rescue on the back of white stallions.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you, that couldn't be more correct. I mean, it's a bottom line. I'm an advocate. I want to see change. Companies are part of that chorus who need to make the change. But no, there are not enough of them there. And even some of the companies that support a price on carbon may have a manufacturing facility that's still using fossil fuels. There are no, or we haven't found, the really pure companies. If the companies are willing to step up and say, we're going to reduce our carbon footprint, we're going to invest in renewable energy, we're going to support public policy so we have a level playing field, so everybody is mandated to deal with climate change, not just the hundreds that are here, that's what we need to happen. But by no means should anyone believe that either I'm saying or the world is suggesting that companies are the new environmental movement.
So finally, Mindy, you've been doing this for quite a long time. Does this climate conference in Paris, does it feel substantially different than others that you've been to?
It does feel different. One difference is 170 companies have come into this already making a commitment that they are setting goals for reducing their carbon footprint in their own countries. That's 170 companies. It's a major difference. Another major difference is the audience who is here saying we need to act sooner and act in a far more major way, and that's financial leaders. They're being heard, and they came to Paris to make that case. So there's optimism in the air. I'm feeling it. I'm seeing it. We won't know till we know. We'll see what comes out of Paris. Under the best of circumstances, it likely won't be enough, but it will be a good start.
Mindy Luber is president of Ceres, the Boston nonprofit that works with businesses and investors towards a low-carbon future. She's speaking to us from the Paris Climate Talks. Mindy Luber, thank you so much for joining us today.
Great. Thank you. Take care.
That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Our show is produced by Imogene Weinstein, Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, and Allison Bruzek. We had help today from Virginia Marshall, Caitlin O'Keefe, Adam Asher, and Zoe Sobel. Tim Skoig is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Have a wonderful and peaceful weekend. Join us again on Monday for more Radio Boston.